We agreed that we... Is that better? Oh, okay. We agreed that you should wait until the annual report has also been signed off, so that when we engage in the context of the annual report and this and the PIC's operations, because all the other things that we wanted to engage on would also be addressed in the annual report.
But also those things in the context of the normal relationship that we have. So this is our very discussion today.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, yeah. Run as slow as you want or as fast as you want.
It's not very key in our evolution because it's not as applied to the everything of the and it seems to be our whole. Thank you.
based on this, 73% of our employees are exchange professionals that work at the CIC and the in terms of employment equity, 69% of our employees are there, 66% are there. And we have 44% names and 56% and in management of the 11 executives, 64% are there and 44% are there.
IFR approved a total of 1.7 billion in infrastructure funds of funds and other private equity investments and the properties. The lot of assets and the property related investments were worth 1.6 billion. Growth in assets under management. In the second year as a corporation, the PIC, the value of assets under management grew by 20.1%, while producing a total return of 18.7%. In the 12 months to 31st March 2007, the fair value of the funds under management grew from 599.5 billion to 720 billion. The total return for the year was 18.7 against 27.6% in the previous 12 months.
Once again, equity is proved to be the worthwhile asset to invest. As we see the PIC4 assets have
Honorable committee, allow the PIC to present this spreadsheet. In March 2000, growth in assets under management were 221.7 billion. March 2001, 253.31 billion. March 2002, 293.21 billion. March 2003, 307.64 billion. March 2004, 377.34 billion. March 2005, 461.42 billion. March 2006, 599.5 billion. March 2007, 720 billion. The percentage of assets under management. In terms of asset classes, equity, the percent was 48.64. The market value thrift 49.75%. Capital market percentage is 35.13. Money market 8.93. Structured product 2.43%. Isibaya 1.91%. Cash 1.7%. And profit 1.26%. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I will ask the Chief Investment Officer to talk about the performance of the company.
Chair, we had another good year. The total return for this financial year was 18.7% versus 37.6% in the previous 12 months. There's a slight slowdown, but this is, in relative terms, a very good performance if you look at it, where inflation is now at around 6%. Within the four asset classes, equities deliver the highest return, as you indicated, 32.5, and it grew in value to about 84.3 billion, bringing the total value to about 350 billion at the end of the financial year. If you look at the table there, the slowdown in performance can be attributed to bonds in particular. Our bond portfolio in 2005-2006 delivered a return of 12.65. The last financial year, it was just a positive 5.72%. And this can be attributed to the tighter monetary policy that we saw in the last financial year. If you will recall that the Reserve Bank hiked interest rates by 300 basis points from June 06 right up to the last MPC meeting. So that has resulted in bonds losing a lot of capital value as yields were rising. And if you look at the size of the bond portfolio, the contribution of the bond portfolio to the total portfolio is about 35%, and therefore that explains why the total portfolio slowed down to from 27.62 to 18.68 in this financial year. It's still a good growth. You can see the table on the right there. These are market indices. You can see the all bonds dropped by almost the same amount from 12.85 in the previous financial year to about 5.6 in the last financial year. What you expect in an environment of tighter monetary policy is that cash becomes an attractive asset class. You get a better return there. You can see the portfolio, CIC portfolio cash, returned 7.13 in the last financial year, 2005-06, and 8.15 in the March 31, 2007. If you compare that with the table on the left, you can see the same trend. 30 is the cash benchmark. It delivers 703 versus 7.82. And the all shares, where you can see equity in the financial year 05-06, where star performer again, delivering 57.4 versus 37.65. What I'm trying to illustrate here is that the drop from 27.6 to 18.7 is in line with what was happening in the market. Okay, if I can take you through the different asset classes, we'll start with equities. We have taken about 146 billion rand from the external managers in December of last year. We switched the composition, which was 28% managed internally and about 72% managed externally, to 72% internal versus 38% externally. The key reason there was to manage the risk. The managers had extremely huge portfolios. They were unable to show their skills, and that resulted in continuous underperformance, and we decided to pull away this money so that they are able to put their skills at work. So now the strategy that we have adopted is that the bigger bulk of the fund, about 75% of the equity portfolio, will be managed in-house on an enhanced benchmark taking basis, and then we will outsource the 30% to the external managers to get active management, as they have the infrastructure and the capacity to do that. The external managers will now focus on delivering outperformance for our portfolio. The fund is reaping benefits out of this structure in the sense that there's a lot of savings for our clients in management fees without sacrificing performance. They will be able to generate outperformance on much smaller portfolios because that gives them flexibility as well as liquidity to move in and out of positions as and when they want to. So we expect to see improved performance. We expect to see improved ratio of excess return versus the risk that they take. That is the information ratio. And in addition to that, we have now minimized the number of constraints that we put on the external managers when they manage our portfolio. There's a high level of freedom in what they can do within the mandate that is given. So on the fixed income, the PIC holds almost 30% of all the bond issuance in South Africa. Versus equities, again, is about 9% of JSC market capitalization. So the PIC is running huge portfolios. All the fixed income is managed internally. Over the period, as we've indicated before, the fixed income, in particular bonds, delivered a return of 5.7% versus 12.7% in the previous year, for reasons that have indicated that the monetary policy was tighter due to the high inflationary environment that we saw in the last few quarters. The total value of the fixed income increased by 11.4% to 328 billion, representing 45.8% of assets under management. Properties, if we move to slide 29 here, we will cover quite a number of things here. Directly held properties are listed, unitized holdings, Pareto in particular, as well as AXA and listed property investments. The highlights for the year ended 31st March. We saw the launch of Advent, and then we saw good performance from our portfolio relative to IPB Life and Pension Fund benchmark. Our portfolio delivered a return of about 28.5 versus 22.3 of the life companies. These are the big life companies, your Liberty, Sunland, etc. Their benchmark delivered 22.3. And IPD, total benchmark return, in other words, all property investments that are covered by IPD, delivered 26.2. So we did well. On the investment activity, we did an acquisition, $43 million acquisition of land in Carfontein in anticipation of the $500 million office park development. We purchased a property portfolio from Dinel of about $227 million, comprising of 6 neighborhood shopping centers, 2 office parks, 2 warehouses, and 1 residential flat, all based in Pretoria. We will sell the residential, if not in our investment universe. We acquired listed properties to a tune of about $1.1 billion over the year, and then we did a $2.3 billion deal to acquire all linked units of CBS, and then we purchased $1.4 billion of SA Corporate. If you look at the structure of the property portfolio, we hold about 23% in directly held properties, equating to about $2 billion. We hold about 64.5% in unlisted, equating to about $4.6 billion. And the listed property is about $2 billion, equating to 22.5% of the total portfolio. You can see the activity in terms of growing the portfolio has come from the listed side of the portfolio. The split in the directly held property and the performance is as follows. You will notice that we returned in total 24.89%, and the largest contribution came from retail, delivering 21.1%, followed by office at 30.7%. But the star performer in the whole portfolio was industrial at 24.1%, although our exposure is very small at about 1.67%. And then specialized property derivatives 4.8%, and then vacant land 7.9%. And those properties that are waiting transfer, this is almost like cash, about 4.53% in return, giving a total return of about 34.64%. The different properties, directly held properties, these are some of the properties in the township that was mentioned. We have Central City. It has 52 square meters shopping center, servicing Mabopane community in the north of Pretoria. The anchor tenants there are ShopRite, Co Supermarket, Clicks and Absa. And since that change, since 2005, the PIC has refurbished Central City into one of the premier retail centers, including additional value mart, food court, and a banking mall. We also did a lot of work in Karankua. Karankua City has got 28,000 square meters shopping center. It services the Karankua community, the community of Social Ngube, and all the other areas around Victoria. The anchor tenants, they are ShopRite, Edgar's, and Tepco. Karankua was refurbished and relaunched in 2006. Here you can see the nice picture there. This is world class, I must say. This development results in the occupancy rate increasing from 80% to 100%. Indirectly held properties, we own 40% of Pareto on behalf of GPF. Pareto owns high-end super regional shopping centers. The value of the property was $7.4 billion. Properties are properties owned and co-owned include Pavilion, Westgate, Central, Southgate, Tiger Valley, and Cresta. The investment in Pareto exposes the GPS to some of the best shopping centers in the
country. Of the
million.
PIC, we had certain constraints that we put forward, and them and the corporatization. And today I'm pleased to report that we still believe that was the right thing to do, and we thank the committee for having allowed us to do so. The board is now firmly responsible as a council. As you remember at the time, the commissioners, while they didn't doubt accountability at all, but there were fuzzy areas when it came to responsibility. And those issues are now behind us. But not only has the board now been able to institute all the different measures to ensure that accountability is on sound footing, but we also have outside confirmation in terms of the regulator being the FSB that confirms our compliance. And we also have, as the CEO has indicated, a client mandate where the client also review on an annual basis how we are meeting and how we fare with those mandates. And there's an added confirmation to us as the board that it's not only our perception that governance is in place, but we get external information as well. We have very many constraints when it came to operational issues, and there were a number of things that we wanted to do which we couldn't implement. And today we have an asset manager that we believe is one of the best in the country, and we will work towards ensuring that it stays there and keep on being improved all the time. As the CIO has mentioned, we've been able to bring in 72% of the portfolio in-house, and it's because we've been able to attract high-quality people. The CEO mentioned the slide trunk of the 50 professionals that we have, and without them we wouldn't have been able to do these things that we have done, and without corporatization we wouldn't have been able to attract these kind of skills that we have now attracted. And that just is another indication of what was needed to be done, and we remain indebted to the support of the committee for allowing us to do so. We had qualified for this report from the Auditor General, if you remember, and we also, over and above the qualified audit report, the management letters were indicating quite significant issues that were bothering the Auditor General that we needed to respond to. And I'm pleased to report that with the corporatization, we've been able to resolve all those things. If you look at the annual report, I'm not sure if you all have copies, you'll see that there's a team audit report once again from the Auditor General. And again, from the board, there's another confirmation by an outside party that cabinet is working at the CIC, that we have been authorized. And in my capacity as chair of audit and risk committee, I used to need extra help to go to bed at night. And now, since the corporatization, I don't even notice that there is night time. I just fall asleep like a day.
Members of the committee. In 2003, PIC began initiatives aimed at ensuring good corporate governance in the companies in which it invested on behalf of the GPM. This has been done out of the firm belief that in the long term, corporate governance is not just an ethical issue. It really has severe negative economic implications when it goes wrong. These implications are not there just for the company and its shareholders, such as the GPM and the PIC, but also has wider implications for the economy and for workers in general. Out of this belief, the PIC, and also in line with best practice, developed a policy on corporate governance and proxy voting. This policy was approved by our board in December 2005. It was formally adopted by the GPM, our client, in 2007. We have brought copies of the policy for the committee members, I think it's been separately, and the policy document is also available online on our website. We really believe that the document is comprehensive, and it's based on sound principles of governance, and we will be looking forward to engaging with our stakeholders on the document. Chairperson, just to highlight that we have been voting in line with our governance document for this document since it was approved in 2005. Some of the issues that we have voted against, for example, has been the issue of placing unissued ordinary shares under the control of directors, because we believe that directors need to justify and motivate why shares should be issued. And the issue of shares has implications for shareholders, and we believe that we should be engaged in that process. And for similar reasons, we have also voted against the issuance, general approval for directors to issue shares for cash. This is just by way of example of the things we've been engaged in. The corporate governance activities of the PIC, we also chose a primary focus area. We have focused on BU transactions, and we have also focused on board diversity. And I think when the chairman made introductory remarks, he did refer to the fact that these are some of the activities that have been profiled to a large extent in the media. As we are building our capacity, we will increasingly widen our focus areas so that they cover the full extent of our policies. We have, however, in the meantime, been voting on all the resolutions of all the companies that the PIC manages shares in. We vote on all AGM, general meetings, and scheme meetings, and this has been the case since December 2005, when the policy was approved by the board. And starting this financial year, PIC will also be publishing its voting decisions on its website, and will also publish the extent of its holdings in the different companies. If you go to the annual report that has just been tabled at the back, you will find the top 40 holdings of the companies that PIC has investments in, and we will continue to update and expand on this list as we move forward. Chairperson, the other issue that I would spend the indulgence of the committee to spend a bit more time on is on the issue of the UN Global Compact and the principles for responsible investment. But also just to give a better explanation to the committee what the initiative is about and the PIC's response to this initiative. The initiative was announced by the former UN General Secretary, Mr. Kofi Annan, in 1999, actually. And it has been driven by the increasing convergence between UN global goals of peace, protecting human rights and development, and the business requirements under globalization, such as building markets, safeguarding the environment, and ensuring social inclusion. And really, broadly speaking, the UN Global Compact aims to foster a more sustainable and inclusive world economy. The principles of the UN Global Compact are based on 10 principles which have universal consensus and are derived broadly from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the ILO Declaration on Fundamental Principles and Rights at Work, the Rio Declaration on Environment and Development, and the UN Convention Against Corruption. And this initiative is based on CEO leadership and is a voluntary initiative which has had global success. It is a multi-stakeholder platform which involves government, business, labor, society in an initiative to improve corporate social responsibility in our everyday practices. The requirements from business of this initiative are that we should embrace, support, and enact within our sphere of influence a set of core values from which these 10 universal principles are derived, and that we should engage with other partners and projects to give concrete expression to these universal principles. And the principles, I have listed those on page 51 to 52, and I think from reading this, we will recognize this also as embodied in some of our legislation in this country, for example, the human rights issues, the labor standards, the recognition of collective bargaining, and the environmental issues, which are so important, and anti-corruption. On page 52. And in recognition of the important role that mainstream financial market players have in shaping the corporate behavior across the world, the UN has focused on owners of assets, managers of assets, and stock exchanges in general in gaining insight to motivate for support and for change in support of these important principles. On 27 April 2006, the UN launched its 6 principles for responsible investment. Shortly after this, the GPF, who is our main client, signed the UN Global Compact as an owner of assets and began engagement with the PIC on how to best implement these principles. We've been engaged in this discussion, and I am pleased, Chairperson, to say that when we finalize our mandate with the GPF, these principles and the GPF obligations under the UN Global Compact were embodied into that agreement, and therefore tying the PIC legally to the requirements and the commitments made by the GPF under the UN Global Compact. And the principles themselves I have listed on page 53. These really are to incorporate environmental and social and corporate governance issues into investment analysis. And to put it more bluntly, is to move these issues, which are so important, from just being soft issues to becoming key financial issues that we will take into account in making our investments, and to be active owners and incorporate these issues into our ownership policies and our engagement with the companies in which we invest. And to seek appropriate disclosure of these issues by the entities in which we invest, and to promote the acceptance and implementation of these principles within the investment industry, and to work together with other stakeholders in a collective effort to implement the principles, and really to report our activities and progress towards implementing the principles. The PIC's approach to this growth strategy, it has been to adopt and support these principles by deepening our commitment to incorporating this into our daily practices, and to look at cooperation, not just with the companies that we invest in, just generally with other stakeholders globally to promote these initiatives. We have been engaged. We this year went to the Global Leadership Summit that was held in Switzerland to talk about these principles with our peers internationally to see what we can do collaboratively to move them forward. In terms of practical application, as I had explained, the GPF is a signatory of these principles, which we are very happy about. We are legally bound to the UN Global Compact, and we are working with the GPF to give substance to this in our everyday life. And I think that's the importance, of the principles for corporations, is that it seeks to really have corporations regard these principles as a way of doing business, generally, not just something that we do as a social responsibility initiative. And we are in the process of reviewing our processes to ensure that we're doing this. And Chairperson, I am happy also to report that the chairperson of our investment committee, Ms. Putin Toba, is a member of the executive committee at the UN that actually was responsible for crafting and moving these principles forward, and is very active in that regard and also in our activities. The short-term goals that we have is to look at our reporting and to make sure that we comply with the PRI reporting requirements. And also, the Chief Investment Officer will help me out as well in terms of the details. What we are working on with the GPF in terms of a rent and sense initiative to back this good initiative is we have looking at developing a socially responsible investment focused fund of R1 billion by the end of our current financial year, which is 31 March 2008. The aim of the fund is not so much to, it's a punitive measure to people who don't comply yet, but it's to reward and highlight those companies that are doing a lot of work in embodying these principles. And we are hoping to be able to come back next year with our annual report and talk to the committee about our experiences with regard to this initiative. Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm going to ask Mr. Matwene to talk about the Pan Africa.
Okay, that's now the presentation which is titled Pan-African Infrastructure Development Fund.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, let's move on to that one.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. The presentation on Pan-African Infrastructure Development Fund will focus on the rationale for the fund. We'll focus on the investment thesis of the fund. We'll give a progress report on what has been achieved to date. We'll give a small overview of the deal flow that is in the fund at the moment. And we'll inform the committee on the second close progress taking place at the moment. In terms of the rationale for the fund, I think the need for infrastructure on the continent is undoubted. And as been proven, no economy or region can be competitive unless its infrastructure is up to scratch. And then the fund will also run through developing infrastructure, promote socio-economic development. And also the fund, by its nature, it starts taking an approach which says that Africa start taking on their problems on their own and investing in those issues to enhance the performance of the continent. In terms of the investment thesis of the fund, first and foremost, the commitments that the fund has are from commercial investors, so therefore an investment return is required from the fund. The fund projects that on a base case performance, it should not achieve a return less than 15% in US dollar terms. The focus of the fund will be in co-infrastructure projects such as in energy, telecommunications, water and sanitation, and transport. In transport, in its wider sense, referring to ports, airports, rail, and those types of investments. The bulk of the investments will focus on projects which have a regional impact in terms of the way, how they focus. It relates to projects which combine very different economies of different countries. The fund will focus in its main on investing in equity and quasi-equity type instruments in the project that it looks on. It will play a catalyst and also a co-promotion role in the project that it participates in. It will partner up with those sponsors on the continent who are focusing on infrastructure development. And the fund is a 15-year fund. I think it's the first 15-year fund on the continent, which then starts then making long-term capital available for projects on the continent. In terms of progress report, where we are, what we have achieved to date, the facilitation trust was established in April 2006, and two trustees were appointed, Mr. Brian Malif and Professor Wiseman Kusu. A team was put in place also in April 2006, three individuals, myself and two other members. The roadshows commenced after the compilation of an information memorandum in June 2006 until about December 2006. We visited close to 10 countries wherein we sold the initiative. And what came out of some of those was the legislative challenges that some of the countries have with regards to investing in initiatives of this nature by their pension funds. And also as a result of this, I think one of the ADB is also looking at assisting some of these countries with improving or enhancing their legislative and regulatory environment to enable them to invest in infrastructure-related type investments. In terms of further today, on the 8th of June 2007, commitments of $625 million were secured from 8 investors. The fund was launched on the 1st of July in Ghana. At the moment, we are preparing for the second closure, which roadshows will start beginning of September. These roadshows will target more African countries and also international investors in the Northern Hemisphere. In addition to raising the capital to date, the team has also focused on generating a deal pipeline to indicate that there is that the fund will be successful and that there will be projects which the fund can invest in. At the moment, we have in excess of 21 possible projects, you know, amounting to in excess of $10 billion that the fund can look at. And all these projects, you know, comprise of the various sectors that the fund can look at, you know, energy, transport, water and sanitation, and telecommunication. The fund has limits within itself as to how much can be invested within any region, how much can be invested within any sector, and the maximum exposure to any sort of like project, a single obligor sort of like of limit. And the fund, whilst it's a 15-year fund, the commitments which have been secured must be invested within the next 7 years. At the moment, the team is preparing the second roadshows. We want to believe that by the end of this month, the private placement memorandum for that roadshow should be complete. We anticipate that by next year, August, in excess, an additional $600 million dollars should be raised to bring the fund in excess of $1 billion. And there will be a focus on both African and international investors for the second close. All the $625 million for now has all been secured, you know, from African institutions. And to reiterate again, the vision of the fund is to create a sustainable infrastructure platform for the whole continent. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Chief Executive, Chairperson of the Board, are there any other additions you want to make before I open this for discussion?
I'm a non-executive. Now, this is our story, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Thanks to the committee. This is who we are. This is what we endeavor to do and to achieve. And I think now we put it over to the committee to run the
meeting. Thank you, Chair.
How many questions am I allowed to pose? No, I just three small questions here, not quite serious stuff. I just want to find one on your notes for your financial statement, page 87. You talk about investment return off for 26 million. And I just want to find out what happened. I'm not a chartered accountant. Can you just explain to me what's the story behind this figure? My second question would be on Isibaya Fund. You approved around 1.7. I can verify my figures. 1.7 billion or so, but you only invested around 250 million. My question is, why was the rest not invested? And linked to that, I just want to find out,
separate. I'll come back to the Israel Fund, the risk management later. I just want to find out, that's the last question, the third question. The Israel Fund and risk management will be...
You wanted to sneak a question. You realize this will be too obvious.
Okay.
Take me for now. We will get on to the next
question. Yes. Yeah. Okay, I just want to find out on the benchmarks of these various asset classes. Have you gone into an interaction and discussion with the GEPF on the construction of this benchmark? Have they agreed to the construction of this benchmark? Because all the time you continue to say this was what was realized in the market. For example, the property benchmark. They agree with you that this is how they are going to judge your performance. This is the benchmark that they agree with.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may say so, I think it's a very impressive report. Mr. Malefi, you're a hugely influential man with a well-deserved reputation for competence, and those who stand to benefit from the pensions in due course will have reason to be grateful for the achievements this year of you and your team. I believe that society generally will benefit from your insistence on increasing diversity and on good governance in the companies in which you invest. Robust engagement with companies will ensure that the muscle that the PRC has will be felt. There's some aspects that I'd like clarity on. First is that there have been suggestions in the financial press that you choose a few targets and then pillory them in public, rather than first engage them at board level, where you have the ability to bring about changes, and that you seem to leave other companies completely alone. That's the first thing. The second is that there was a good deal of criticism in the financial press about the lack of clarity about the PRC's commitment to the UN Global Compact and so on. Can you tell me why there seems to have been such a long delay in clarifying the situation as has been done this morning? These facts and figures and commitment could easily have been put before the public at an earlier stage instead of it appearing as though this is a response to a campaign. And the third matter I'd like to raise is that although you paid from the public purse, you seem to be intolerant of criticism. Instead of dealing with the merits or otherwise of the criticism itself, the suggestion is that you personalize and racialize the matter. Whites who criticize are racists or apologists for apartheid, and blacks who criticize are sellouts. How would you respond to that criticism?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think members also should also desist from doing what Mr. Gibson has done. Whilst he himself makes some personal accusations to the chief executive, he accuses him also of doing the same. So, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And it's about the PRC, I would imagine, not about the person. Who's the next? Dr. Wood?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Got two issues. The one leads on from Mr. Gibson's issue, but with a different perspective. I think the key issue of your mandate, is to achieve good returns from your investments and that are sustainable. And one does that largely in the interests of pension fund holders. We do see policy having been developed in later years where you've expanded your objectives. Personally, we support those. I think the transformation agenda is very appropriate for a body with your muscle. But just to answer your practical level, how do you make decisions where a decision on an investment is not simply about a good investment, it could be about other issues as well, whether it leads to board representativity changes or BEE translations. But there must be at times where there could be an apparent conflict of where your priority should lie. So if you could just tell us what your experience has been in making such decisions up until now. Thank you. The second issue concerns your performance, where on a closer look, and look at equities as your biggest area, where your performance compared to the previous year dropped somewhat. I'm just looking without a calculator that you dropped something like 41%. But you ask us to look at this against the JSE All Share, which I see dropped, I think, somewhat less than that, 37%. So in the biggest area of your portfolio, you slightly underperformed against the All Share index. I think when it comes to the JSE, some people perform above, some perform below. I think we would have the expectation of you to, if anything, perform slightly above, and that perhaps this result is marginally disappointing. Could you comment on that? Thank you.
Ms. Pops.
Thank you, Chairperson, and apologies for coming late from another meeting. Thank you very much, Chairman of Peckham, the CEO. I must say this is quite an impressive investment giant. A couple of questions, though. One, perhaps, Chair, I can just indicate that I was quite impressed to see the investment in the community that has been up to now in financially marginalised in the township areas, and also the fact that you're actually making a very sound and profit investment there. But on the other hand, I was having a look, Chairperson, at the annual report on pages 42 and 43, and very interested in the concentration risk, which you quite rightly point out, that the one approach you have would be to diversify the funds and avoid too much of a concentration in one area or an excessive concentration. And yet you also indicate that at the same time you manage this risk in accordance with the client investment mandate, which dictates the level of concentration. So who is dictating the level of concentration, the client or your policy? And how does this balance out? The other area is that your rather useful financial instrument called derivatives, which is one of our Olympic trackers and so on. Now, I think that you've used this quite judiciously and prudently, but nevertheless, I would just like to learn, the Chairperson from the PIC, exactly how do they adopt their hedging policy in relation to the use of derivatives?
Okay, the last one is Ms. Tumbuni.
Thank you, Ken. I just want to add that the general question is that there's a general outcry from all quarters, quarter to the media, that the BEE is actually benefiting those who are connected to the ANC elite, also to the ruling class. And in your one of the strategies is to also to finance PE. And how are you financing PE transactions without actually falling into the trap that it's only the chosen few that benefit from the PE or from PIC when you finance your PE? Secondly, you said you managed by two corporatization, you managed to retain skills or to attract skills. Now, how are you able to make to attract skills, balancing your remuneration package to what we're trying to achieve, or the reserve bank is trying to achieve to keep inflation down by perhaps your remuneration, is it above inflation rate or below inflation rate? I just want to say, how do you balance that, keeping your skills and also making sure that you don't spare inflation in your competition? And also, lastly, Chair, do as your product incentive scheme, I've seen the shareholders voted against buying some shares. But do you as executive have incentive schemes where senior management in PIC have got shares in the company?
Can we then take responses to the questions asked, and then we'll take the next batch?
Thanks, Chairperson. I would request to deal with the issue that the honourable member keeps in the train. Not because the CEO can't deal with it, but basically to try to ensure that we don't personalise such matters, and also to reflect that what the CEO does reflects, as indicated by our Chief Operations Officer, the policy of the PIC. Quite clearly, there is a view that we need to dispel that is out there, that in the CEO's office, I hope the members of the Portfolio Committee will come and be here for a site visit. In the CEO's office, there is a dark board that has names of companies. And every morning, the CEO of the PIC wakes up and takes a dust and hits and says, there goes his left in life. It's not like that, you know. It's not ad hoc, it's not something that is dependent on the CEO. And it's something to a large extent that I want to place it on record that the PIC engages with these companies. You know, what you see, what is exposed in the media, is basically something that does not reflect that is the only mechanism. It's not how we engage with the companies that we invest in. In most instances, the CEO has had numerous meetings with a whole range of companies around issues of concern that we believe ought to be taken up with those companies. And I think that has been the conduct of the CEO. You know, it's not something we don't think it's proper or decent to communicate with entities where we as the PIC are investors through the media, because we have much more effective avenues to do so. And I would like to indicate that is exactly what is happening. It's not targeting, and to a large extent we do engage quite extensively through the CEO and the team led by the CEO with the different companies in dealing with some of the areas that we believe need a bit of attention. The fact that the consequence of that is that somehow the CEO has developed a profile, you know, out there, a profile that to a large extent is not because it's something that the CEO woke up and started to develop this profile. It's because, to a large extent, it's an indication of South Africa, you know, that the more there are people who are actually share, who basically propagate and live up to the whole principle of shareholder activism, there will be less focus on the individual. There will be more quite keen and dedicated people who ensure that they protect shareholder value and the values around those entities and companies. And I'm saying that because there are so few of them around, and hence there is this attention that is focused on the CEO of the PIC. And I think it's also quite important to a large extent to indicate that. That takes me to another question of intolerance on the side of the CEO. Is there any concrete example you value them, particularly as the board, you know, where he has reflected any form of intolerance, you know? But as far as we know, having sat with him, having scanned also the media and all that, we are not aware of levels of intolerance on his side, you know. But we might have missed something that probably honourable member Gibson was basically be able to bring to our attention. Because you're quite right that the PIC, we have values that the PIC is basically safeguarding, and one of which is something that says we uphold the mandate of our clients, you know,
That is one of the key things. Secondly, we also want to set an example within the corporate world in terms of ensuring that we live by what we say. And I'm saying that those are some of the things that I believe the CEO, as far as we know, in our own experience, he has basically not compromised any values that the PIC has set for itself. In as far as the UN global commitments and all that, and I thought the COO has explained the issue. One of the things that happens is that we as the PIC have engaged the very media that has raised this issue. But the fact of the matter is that at some point they choose not to report our levels of engagement. And I thought it was important today for the committee to also to reflect on it, the measures that we've undertaken, what step are we taking, the levels of commitment, and some of the concrete steps that we are taking together with the GEP. Thank you. I thought probably that that would deal with that set of questions. The other one is around the black economic empowerment that has been raised. Quite clearly, one of the things also is it's a view that is out there. It's a perception. From the side of the PIC, we deal with those entities, project proposals that are brought to our attention by the entrepreneurs. And in so doing, to a large extent, we look at, towards the end of the day, we're talking about safeguarding the saving of the pensioners. We act on behalf of our clients. We don't do things outside that. That's our answer. We'll never go into a project that, to a large extent, is not going to bring the benefits and the good returns on behalf of our clients. And I think that is what safeguards the whole activities of the PIC. It's not the basis, it's basically what's in the project, what's in the proposal.
Just to add, Mr. Gibson, that the GPF signs the Global Compact. And the GPF gives us a mandate to manage their funds, which mandate includes the Global Compact. And I repeated this to the journalist who was publishing that we haven't signed the compact, that we are bound by the compact because the GPF has signed it. And I would not like to go and disrespect the GPF by going and sign something that is already in their mandate, because we're just an agent for the GPF. Just to correct that perception, and we did indicate this to the journalist, who says that we have not signed the compact, and when are we going to sign it? The GPF has signed it, and we have a mandate from the GPF that includes the compact in it. But as the CEO has indicated, we've gone further than that. The chairperson of the investment committee of the CIC sits on the executive committee of the UN committee that has drafted the compact. So we did not understand what the real issue was about.
Chairperson, just on an issue of remuneration, I chair the remuneration committee, and I can just confirm to the honourable members that first of all, there is no share scheme at PIC, and therefore the management does not own any shares. There's no share incentive. And secondly, I can also confirm that we are in no way in the league of fueling inflation, because we actually paying behind market. All the executives that we have, it's quite known, even the potential suitors are aware of this, that they are earning below market, and if all they were coming to the PIC forward for money, they would have long left. It's not easy, but we don't build a team only around remuneration. We believe that we're building an asset for the nation. We believe that as an employer, we're offering other specialized opportunities within PIC that you otherwise wouldn't get anywhere else in the market. And we try to be not far behind the market, but we definitely not at the market, and not and totally not even leading the market. And we have no intention of leading the market in remuneration. That's the nature of the company that we are. And when you come in to join the team, that is quite clearly explained to you from the board members. If you look at what we pay, for board fees is also not in line. That's the philosophy of the PIC. We're not there for the remuneration, but there's other things at stake. Of course, the bond still has to be paid, so we do look up after our employees as best as we can. But we do not hide the fact that we're not at the market rate, and it's a known fact within the PIC, and even to new entrants that are willing to join us, that is how we explain it to them.
On page 87, I believe the question was about the provision, if I understand the question correctly, it's about the provision. The 186 million rand provision, it relates in particular to two investments that were made within the entire PIC portfolio that did not perform very well. We are working to save some value on these investments, which we're hoping to make some progress during this financial year on. So the message that I want to put across is two investments of approximately 286 million rand in a 719 billion rand portfolio. And the percentage is about 0.26% of the portfolio, and I think that's substantially below industry norms and expectations of one or two investments not performing in line. But when that happens, and the chairperson can attest to this, we pull out all the stops to make sure that their situation is attended to and, where possible, to put the company back onto the performing track.
Just to add to some also that the COO referred to is the big amount of 186 million, which is a provision. I think what you were asking about was the 26 million that has been written off. That is an investment that was made some time ago that involved an option. One of them was an option that the option was not exercised and therefore we valued it down. But the 26 million that was written off is the amount of investments that were written off out of the portfolio of 720 billion. So we do not think that it is enough to sound alarm. And the 186 that the COO is referring to is a provision. But we think we can still save some of this for which provision has been made.
And maybe if I can go ahead and answer the question on Isibaya. 1.7 billion rand of investment was approved, and your question was that only 250 million rand of this has been spent. I think that what happens is that there's a time lag between when we approve an investment at an investment committee or board level, and when the people for whom that investment has been approved are able to draw down the approved funding in relation to a project. For example, infrastructure projects can have drawdown periods that last up to 5 years, where the commitment has been made, but as and when the project progresses, they require the capital to be drawn down. We do not have the matter of practice, once the funding is approved, give money to the companies that are involved. It's best as and when we control that money and only put it on verified requirements of the project. And with regard to the benchmark, I think that there was a question about the benchmark. The benchmark construction is something that we view as very important, almost very sacrosanct. We discuss it with our clients over and over. And these benchmarks that we have are customized to each client, and they reflect the requirements of the client. We go so far as where the client does not have the capacity to request that they appoint independent consultants who will assist them in the construction of the benchmark and also assessing their needs through what we normally call asset liability study to make sure that we exactly get right their requirements so that we don't miss each other in terms of the strategy we employ. So we are happy that it is in line with our lines of funding.
I think this deals also with the question of concentration rate. Who determines concentration rate? The asset liability study that the client conducts normally gives them the kind of strategic asset allocation that they will have, the proportions in the different asset classes that they want to invest in line with the risk appetite or the relationship between the assets and the liability will determine the proportions into each and every asset class, and therefore the concentration in a particular asset class. So the client takes responsibility of determining what level of concentration is they are comfortable with. And probably on that I can touch on derivatives. Again, the client provides us with the policy on how to deal with derivatives. And across all the clients, the use of derivatives has always been to manage risk. From hedging, from using them to dispose assets, and no speculation, nothing like that. I mean, we stick to client policy in doing our asset management activities. We will never use derivative currency. We are conscious of the fact that they can be dangerous. I think Warren Buffett calls them weapons of mass destruction. So we are careful. And then there was an issue on the performance of equities in particular. There are two issues here at work. First, the benchmark or the performance that you see in the portfolio, the fact that it's lower than the all share for both periods is the fact that the benchmark is not the all share in the portfolio. It's a customized benchmark. What is the way it's designed is that the fact that it has a lower weighting in resource components. And therefore, when resources outperform like they did in the last financial year, yes, you will see the oil share outperforming the benchmark. But it has a very important characteristic in the sense that it's not as volatile as the oil share. In addition, it's not as concentrated in resources as the offshore. That is the first difference. If you look at the differential between the two financial years, you will notice that the fund has dropped in performance growth by 21.15%. If you do the same comparison with the offshore, you get about 19.35% difference. In other words, 57.4 minus 57.65 will give you about 19.35. Now, the bigger differential there can be attributed mainly to the underperformance of our external manager. As we have indicated here, that the big reason why we decided to switch the 70-30, in other words, external 70, 75, versus 75 internal, was solely because of the reason of underperformance. That managers were sitting on huge portfolios. Even if they were good, they were unable to put their conviction into the portfolio because of constraints such as liquidity in particular. So therefore, the differential, which is about, you can say about 1.8% in underperformance relative to the two periods, is solely because of underperformance in the external component of our equity portfolio.
If I can add to that, and I think what the CIO needs to say is that we have seen a marked improvement in this matter that he raises since we withdrew funds from the external managers and brought it in-house. And hopefully when we do come back to report in the coming financial year, you will see that that trend has reversed.
We We still have more hands, but geez.
An opportunity, but not an obligation. Colonel Bishop was his wife, took a very bad exist, didn't he?
I don't know what they're talking about. You may say so, I couldn't possibly comment.
Mumble the word if you're allowed to say that when you're going.
Can we please set it down so that we can start? I've got four hands on my list. Mr. Marae, Mr. Asiya, Mr. Gibson, and Mr. Mloto. Mr. Mgune, can you put Mr. Mgune's name on? We start, Mr. Marae. Oh, that's good.
Thank you, Chair. There's two questions, Chair, that I first want to ask about the Ibaya fund. The one is just an elaboration on the loans. On that page 40. The other returns are quite substantially higher than that from the loans. And maybe if you could just elaborate on the type of loans and to whom and rates and securities on that. And then my second question of the three is in terms of the so your primary focus is on the e-transactions. This is
can I just check, you said page 40, are you referring to the presentation or to the annual report?
On the presentation.
Yeah, rather.
Apologies.
Rather do mention that because we'll go to the annual report.
Okay, my apologies.
Okay.
And on page 46 where you mentioned the e-transactions as the primary focus area. Now just for clarity, does that correlate with your definition of a BEE transaction? Does that correlate with the DTI's codes of good practices, the charters, and their definitions of the transactions? And then thirdly, in the annual report, and this is also just something that I, for me to just understand that figures better, we have seen that the returns for this last year is down from the previous year. We also see on page 62 of the annual report that remuneration to non-executive directors are down from the previous year. We even see that car allowances to the executive management is less than the previous year. But for some other reason, the bonuses at increased more than double. I'm not quite sure what the policy on the bonuses is, and in terms of the justification to understand why so much more bonuses has been paid out than the previous year, looking at the lower returns of this year and in terms of the other things that I've pointed out. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Arthur.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a comment and a question at the same time. Okay, I think that we as this committee, I think it is us. We as this committee, when we exercise our oversight role and our constitutional obligation, I think it befits that we have to congratulate the PIC for getting a clean slate from the Office of the Auditor General. I think my friend, Mr. Wood, will agree with me that the annual report is an ex post facto issue. Then it suggests that you deal with the corpse and give the prognosis what is this this corpse has died for. And this one, it's clear the prognosis is clean. This corpse it has died a natural death. you know, I'm very dialectic, Chairperson. I'm from the psycho congress.
The cops analogy worries.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, Chairperson, on a serious note, having said that, Chairperson, that this is our duty as a committee, which we have to be doing. And the serious note is that both of them were serious, is that we should not meet with cops. We should meet with to give diagnosis when the PIC is moving towards submitting the report to the Office of the Auditor General as per the PFMA, that we shall have received quarterly reports and all those kinds of things. And one will want to get some lesson learned from the previous audited report. I know for the fact that while you were given an unqualified report by the Office of the Auditor General, most of the things were on the managerial issues other than the finances. So hence what this PSMA is going on, the number of departments which are having problems as you have. I think this committee will be clear if we can be given the lessons which we have learned up until you reach where at the point which you are. Those are the issues, Chairperson, I think for us we have to, some of them are the major one in terms of our constitutional obligation as this committee. Thanks. And the last thing is that we have to also to interrogate this annual report clearly so that we'll be able to understand as to what is going on, other than this short period of time to discuss it. Thank
you. Yeah, I think what Mr. Afia is saying is exactly what the Deputy Minister said earlier, that since this annual report has not been officially tabled in Parliament, the committee still has an opportunity to engage with it. And I hope Mr. Afia is not exposing this committee for having not prepared thoroughly for this engagement by not looking at the previous annual report, but that's not it. The whole purpose was to look at the operations in the PIC in relation to this annual report, even though it's not yet tabled officially in Parliament. And all the speakers did indicate that they would be quite happy to engage with us going forward when the committee has prepared itself properly. The next one is Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question relates to the mandates which the PRC gets from its clients. Do the clients dictate the mandate, or do you suggest what the mandate should be and then negotiate and agree? That's the first one. And then secondly, do the clients give you a mandate relating to the investment strategy in the sense of when do they agree that you can take effective control of a company and when can you actually take management control of a company? I've looked at the percentages here and your top 40, your percentage holding ranges from 25.2 down to 8.58. And there are obviously a lot of others that are below that. Is there a strategy on the part of the board to move towards exercising control of companies? Is there a move towards exercising management control? And I've asked this question against the background of what I've read about the PIC becoming a huge player in the property market and in fact appearing to run its own property company. Is there a suggestion that you will do that in other aspects of the market in other companies? Thank you, sir.
And also I was reminded by Dr. Woods that there was a question that was not responded to, even though I can't recall, but I think the chief executive also acknowledged that. So if you could include Dr. Woods' question when we respond.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to find out from PIC whether over a time horizon of, let's say, 3 years, have you assessed the effectiveness of EC Buyer Fund, whether it's giving the desired outcomes? And secondly, given that at times EC Buyer Fund does invest in unlisted companies, I just want to find out if you could give us a bit of in detail what's the risk management strategy that you adopt in relation to such entities. Obviously, the strategy might be different from that of a listed company because of certain stipulations from the JSE. My third question would be the building of in-house capacity to manage equity. Can you give us a bit of detail whether you have indeed sufficiently built that capacity and whether that capacity is not going to be overwhelmed by the equities that you have withdrawn from external managers?
That's a short one here. Before corporatization, there used to be a rep from each province on the PIC. How do you now take perhaps provincial interest, or has that gone with the corporatization? I just looked in all those impressions they have shared on the properties, mostly they are based in housing, and most of the FDIs are also based either in Western Cape, housing, and KZN. How do you address that issue? As according to your report, page 47, you are not aiming at profit maximization. I just based on it.
And none in the precinct. You just omitted that part in your question. Professor Turok?
Chair, I wasn't going to say anything because I've been an absentee member here for quite a while, but I think that I would like to draw the attention of the committee to the fact that in the early days of this government, in the 90s, 95, in that period, I was particularly active in trying to understand the PIC, which was behaving like a secret society. We were unable, despite correspondence, despite many efforts, to actually get access to information about what the PIC had, what they were doing, and so on. And today's presentation is a remarkable reversal of that situation. I think we should appreciate that. It's remarkably open, transparent, and so on, and one must appreciate that. The second point I'd like to make relates a little bit to what Dr. Woods was saying about the main objectives of the PIC. What hasn't come out strongly enough, it seems to me, is that the GEPF does want to see sound management of its finances, but it also has socioeconomic objectives. And the GEPF, as I know, has very strong views that the investments that the PIC makes also relates a bit to Mr. Gibson's point. The GPF is the main shareholder, main funder of the PIC. Has very being employees and trade unions and so on, they have very strong views on what their money should be doing for South Africa. It's not just a matter of a percentage increase in profits and so on.
So it seems to me that the management of the PIC has quite a tricky role to play in managing the funds in a very responsible manner, which safeguards the pensions and assets of government employees, but at the same time there is a mandate. There's no question about that. There is a mandate to perform socioeconomically and to assist South African advance. It's there. And I don't think this has emerged strongly enough in this discussion, although it has been referred to by the panel. But there is a mandate. It's a very strong mandate, and rightly so.
Thanks. Dr. Woods, your hand was up, or did you want to remind me about your question, or you had another?
Yes, Chief, just to remind you about the question that was unanswered. But if I could just add on to Professor Turok's comment back in 1995, he will also remember that the PRC was one man who sat in an office who nobody knew, who made all the decisions about the billions and billions of rands, and that's a fact. Yeah. So we've come a long way. But if I could have my earlier question responded to, thanks, Chief.
Okay. So when the P actually represented the personal investment commission, because if it's one person, it can't be public.
The other point about in those days was that the bulk of the investment was done by commercial brokers on the stock exchange, and they were a law unto themselves. So we, as Parliament and as this committee, didn't know what they were doing, where they were investing. Dr. Woods will confirm. It was a private enterprise under the government's name.
Thanks. It's useful to have some of those veterans amongst us, because at least we know where we're coming from. We're not only reading about it, but we know exactly what is the situation. Can we then take responses to the questions asked?
Chairperson, perhaps if I could start on the question that's related to the loan and the returns on the loan. I think what the manner in which the ECYR transactions are structured, quite simply, is that in most of the transactions, there's a component, there are two components to the funding. There's a component whereby we extend loan funding, and the cost of that funding to the people we advance the money to is determined in relation to the riskiness of that transaction as we have assessed it in terms of our investment analysis. And also, in addition to that, we require that we participate in some of the upside or the increase in value of that investment up and above just the return, the percentage return on the loan, which is why on the presentation that we are referring to, you will see that although loan is 8.52% return, you also have to take into account the equity rights, which is the life item right below that, which has a return of 53%, because those are equity rights that attach to the funding that we have extended. So it's a blending of the two. And you see, in percentage terms, they're almost just about the same. So I think that the loans have not underperformed, and what it is really is a blending of the two to achieve a return for those investments. And I think there was an issue around whether or not the BEE transactions that we undertake correlate, or the BEE transactions that we look at correlate with the DTI definition of empowerment. Yes, it does. We do look at the guidelines and the legislation that is provided around empowerment, and we conform to that. And I think Mr. Sehole will talk about the question on remuneration.
The question on remuneration, to start off with the board, why the board's remuneration is lower than last year, is just purely a level of activity. In the transition on the corporatization, we had a lot more activity, a lot more meetings in 2006 than in the past financial year. So it's just a level of, a reflection of the level of activity. And in terms of management remuneration, we actually instituted a bonus scheme in this current financial year. Prior to that, what you see in 2006 was the interim arrangement For instance, Dr. Den was on secondment, and that was the arrangement he had with the previous employer. And then if you look at the CEO, that was the arrangement with National Treasury. So the scheme from the PIC point of view came in effect for the first time in this current financial year. So that's why the difference. And in terms of the different components, I think there was a point of, for instance, car allowance being higher in the previous year than in this current year. That's just a matter of structuring of the packages. We know the benefits of having car allowance are reducing on a year-to-year basis, and that follows in the restructuring of one package.
Chairperson, if we can then deal with the next set of questions, I think those related to mandates, as to whether or not our clients dictate mandates. And I think to a large extent, our clients do in fact dictate the mandate. However, the process of finalizing a mandate, as you can imagine, is a very intricate and involved exercise because there are two sides to the coin. If you take a GPF, for example, they have a very good understanding of the liabilities of the pensioners and how those behave. At the same time, we as the PIC every day live with their asset portfolio. So we have a better understanding of their asset portfolio and how it behaves as well. So the process of matching the requirements in order to be able to enable the GPF to meet its liabilities requires of necessity a collaboration on the two sides of the equation to make sure that we come up with something that makes sense. So, but in the ultimate end, they take responsibility for giving us a clear mandate as to how we must manage their funds. On the issue of investment strategy, particularly in relation to the property market, I think the transaction you are referring to the delisting of CBS in the market. PIC undertook that transaction for a particular reason, and that reason being that the GPF portfolio has been historically underinvested in property investments, and what the CBS delisting allowed us to do is to obtain a vehicle that had both good assets where the GPF needed assets, but also has the human skills that will allow the GPF to be able to grow its property portfolio. And as you can imagine, property has been performing very well, which means that the investment professionals in that space are in high demand. And to put together that collection of people with the right level of skills and expertise, one by one, could have taken much longer. So in addition to the assets being good, there's an advantage of having a vehicle that could be used to better manage and advance the interests of a GPF in private property concerns.
At what stage do you take control, effective control of companies, and at what stage do you decide that you're going to provide management, or is that not really part of the mix?
I think if I can answer that question, the Honourable Member Gibson, that the CBS is a listed company, and the stock exchange has quite specific guidelines around the conduct of people wanting to acquire and take control of those companies. And we basically follow those. And for example, at a particular point, you have to make a mandatory offer to everybody. So once you breach that level, the JSE actually compels you to do that. So in that case, we follow the JSE guidelines. However, as a general rule, the PIC does not take management control of companies. As you can see from the 40 companies we've given shareholdings of, we have no management control of any of those companies. It is not our core skill. We believe in supporting good management teams in those companies to move those forward. We are shareholders.
Yeah, just to say that you can still enjoy this privilege of being a new member. So times when it breaches some of the committee's normal tradition, I allow him to.
Okay.
proceed. But no, that wasn't very bad. The truth, yeah. Proceed with the response.
Just to add on to what the COO has said, in the case of private equity investments at Isibaya that get into trouble, we have a special workout unit that gets in sometimes. But that is for unlisted investments that are sometimes getting into trouble. So I don't want Mr. Gibson to say, but why are you doing that? Because you say you never do it at all. But we do it where there are private, that 26 million or the 186 million that we provided for. Normally, we also become very active in engaging management to save those investments.
The risk management of unlisted investment, we think we've got a very good process from investment approval right up to monitoring. That's a pretty watertight process that we engage in. IC, investment committee, and the board have a final say in approval of any investment. And so when a person walks in for the first time, we as management screen the investment, try to understand what the investment is about, understand the business, we look at the risk profile, we look at the strategy fit, we look at things like a thorough due diligence, we agree with the borrowers on certain legal terms, certain legal deliverables such as reporting, giving us monthly reports on the investment on an ongoing basis. And one additional thing that we do is to seek board representation or representation in one of the key committees such as investment committee, so that we have control and understanding of the business as it evolves. So in short, I can say we have a very strong process of risk management. And we have system internally to monitor the investment on an ongoing basis. On the capacity to manage the money that we've moved in-house, we are not running at an optimal level yet of capacity, but we have extremely strong analysts already, about four of them. And the nature of this portfolio is that it's going to track the benchmark. So we will take active positions, or you will see overweight and underweight only at the margin. Due to the size of the portfolio, if you are overweight, for example, a stock by about 50 basis points or 5 basis points over the benchmark, in rent terms, is a lot of money. So we need to manage those kind of exposures. And for that, we need a very good team of analysts, which we believe we have already, and we are building on it.
If I can further assist on that question, just by providing more detail, I think if we can go back, I think the CIO, to just maybe explain the concept of the strategy, of the equity strategy and how the portfolio is managed. We, in the last 24 months, we did extensive research, both here and internationally, on portfolios of the size that the GPF has. And what came out in that study is essentially that over time, as the portfolio increases, managers' ability to outperform the stock exchange decreases in size as the portfolio grows in size. And what that means is that, in simple terms, if you were to just buy an index of how the JSE is invested to a large part, you would almost replicate some of the performance. But at the same time, you are paying for the active management of those portfolios by external managers. Hence, the strategy that says the core of the portfolio, which needed to be largely passive, must be brought in-house, which is what has happened. And around that core, we have very sophisticated information management systems that allow us to track in a systemized way how the portfolio should change in terms of buying or selling as the JSE index that is modeled on, or the benchmark is modeled on, as those change. And around that, you then require a smaller component of human beings to manage and take the intelligent decisions around where to go oversight, or to go over or to go under. And I think that, in essence, we feel that over time we'll build on that capacity. However, given where we are, we have adequate capacity.
Just to say that there are two questions perhaps that were left out. I think the first one was, what are the lessons that the PIC left in the cleanup of the corporation after corporatization, dealing with the issues of the audit general and so on? I think that the most important lesson that we have learned is the centrality of the board and the leadership of the board in dealing with these matters, that we are committed to hold management accountable for the things that are required to be done to clean up the corporation or the Auditor General's report when it comes and it does not look good. It is ultimately the responsibility of the board, and certainly in the PIC case, I think good governance, firstly. Secondly, the consistency of the board members, because they retain institutional memory. Even when there is a new CEO, the people that know about the company are the existing board members. To rely on their institutional memory, but also their persistence to see things done from board meeting to board meeting to board meeting, and holding manageable accountable, and being prepared to take difficult decisions when things are not being done in the way that they want done. I think for us at the PIC, those were the key critical lessons. But perhaps at some point what we may want to do is to write a case study of the PIC of how we have managed to move from the situation that the Auditor General described a few years ago to where we are now. And maybe perhaps at some point we should try the COO. Yeah, we'll make sure that that gets done. Secondly, Dr. Wood's question was about conflicts. If you go into the classical literature on business, there are some contradictions actually between the interests of the board and the interests of shareholders and the interests of management. These are sometimes not aligned, because the management and the board sometimes want to grow the company and make it an empire. That's an example of a conflict or a contradiction. And the shareholders want to invest money and get returns quickly, so they want dividends. Whereas management may want to build an empire or grow the business further to make it more substantial and increase their own power base. The shareholders are not interested in the power base of management. They just want the return for the investment that they have made. And sometimes these are not properly aligned. I think the way that we manage it is firstly an understanding of where management comes from, and identifying the issues that management wants to achieve, and being able to distinguish between management's genuine desire to increase shareholder value and management's desire just to maintain the status quo or just build an empire. So we try to analyze and understand these and decide what the source of the conflict is when we act on behalf of the shareholders. And so that is generally how we try to manage it. I think it's on a case-by-case basis, but as long as one remembers that there are always contradictions and conflicts between what shareholders want to achieve and what management wants to achieve. As a rule of thumb, however, we believe that in South Africa today, transformation is good for long-term sustainability and profitability. To the extent that there are pockets in the landscape where people do not believe that the transformation will lead to sustainability, we engage with these sentiments from the point of view of being a long-term shareholder in the South African economy on behalf of the pension fund. Because 30 years from now, the PIC and the GPF will still be there with the current investments that we have made. And if we do not transform the economy now, we will not get the benefits in 30 years' time. So as a rule of thumb, we believe that transformation is is good for sustainability and profitability and for the good of society at large. And that was the question that Dr. Woods had asked but was not answered. The other one was the representation from each province. Now, we have tried to make sure that we invest in all the provinces. In fact, the GPF investment in 1994 was an amalgamation of the investments of all the homelands. And so you will see that we have properties in Mthatha, in Mafikeng, in basically Mthatha.
I think we have investments in all the provinces, I think, except for the northern region.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I was just about to say, yeah, we've got in...
It is receiving our utmost attention.
Yeah. Yes, Phalaborwa, Mafikeng, Phuthaditjhaba, Durban, Western Cape, we have experienced it. In the Northern Cape, I went to speak to the investment council there, and I hope that we can find activities that will be beneficial to the province.
Yeah, have all the questions been dealt with? Yeah. The Advent, I saw that the Advent is 60% owned by the PIC. What about the 40%?
The 40% is owned by a company called Fisher Close Asset Management. And the reason that is that they had a separate portfolio also looking at similar type investments. And what we've done is now put together the two portfolios to have a much larger portfolio. And I think that as of year end, it has 13 properties. However, I am very happy to report that as at this stage, we are up to 20 properties in different provinces, and hopefully by the end of the financial year, we would have managed to even build that up better.
There we have it. Thank you. Thank you so much for making time to appear before the committee, and I think we have benefited from this engagement, but that says then we still have to engage properly on the annual report once it's properly tabled and once members have found time also to go through it and prepare themselves for further engagement. But once again, thank you very much, Deputy Minister, Chief Executive and your team. We look forward to another healthy engagement when we do engage. Perhaps what we should also do, I see it's been a long time since we've last engaged with yourself. We should try and reduce that gap in the future. There we have it. This brings us to the end of the session. The PIC is going to be using this venue. I would want to see that declared in your next financial statement. Because we booked the venue, and all of a sudden you guys want to make use of the venue. Thank you very much. Meeting is adjourned.
You want to go first?
Please. Ready? I would want us to break 10 minutes for tea.
and then come back up here.